guys, welcome back to this week's episode of our side sessions. This one is really special because it's all about me. I am going to be answering all of your questions. So let's get into it. What do you guys have? Oh, wait, I didn't introduce you guys.
No,
it's because it's all about you.
It's all about me. Oh, it's my intro to narcissism. Just kidding. What do we got? What do you want to
know? I'll start with this one. You were asked, why did you choose TMS over other options such as ketamine-assisted therapy, vagus nerve stimulation, etc.?
Oh, I didn't know that there was a thing as vagus nerve stimulation. So that's that to answer that question. For me, why I didn't choose ketamine, it wasn't something that I had a lot of information on. Mm-hmm. I suck at taking medications in general. Like, it's really good that I was, like, able to stay with my, like, antidepressants, but it took me a while to want to take them. Mm-hmm. So, like, then the idea of doing something like ketamine and things like that, even though it's very managed by a doctor, that would have taken me, like, 6 months to even hype myself up to being like, okay, let's call the doctor. Yeah. So I tried TMS because I knew that it was pretty low invasive, like the appointments. I showed up, went to the appointment, continued on with my day. I did it. The downfall is it was a time commitment, so that was a lot, but I kind of did it more because it was a really solid, like, outpatient. Like, there was no, like, you have to, like, none of that. It was like I went in, got some magnet stimulation, and left.
That's simple.
Like, the appointments were a half hour long.
Yeah.
And it was only 17 minutes of that, like, treatment. And then, like, literally, I was, like, listening to Taylor Swift during the whole thing and, like, chatting. So. Yeah.
And there's probably more, like, accountability to show up since you had to
go. Yeah. Well, and you create it in, like I created it in my own schedule. Like, I went every day at, like, 7:30. Mm-hmm. So.
Good for you.
AM or PM?
AM.
I was about to say, oh, my God, did you hear my neck crack? That's my neck.
Mom it.
Oh, my God.
I think there's more to that lyric, but
yeah. I'll
keep it PG today.
All right, next question. If you can do any one thing with no constraints or consequences, such as time, money, or society, just say those weren't a thing, what would you do and why? I'm assuming for, like, occupationally, like a profession.
Oh, for a profession? Yeah. Oh, because that's not where my mind went. where my mind went, I would not put on a podcast. for occupation?
Yeah. Like, what would you do with your time, really? And time's not an issue. Money's not an issue. Nothing.
I feel like I would... You guys saw me. Like, I feel like I'd be so overwhelmed with choices, I would never make a choice. You guys saw me trying to pick an outfit last night. Like, it was so bad. Like, I need some semblance of a structure.
Yeah.
So, like, what would you do?
I think you would do something crafty. I don't know.
Absolutely. Like, I would do something crafty. Travel.
Yeah.
It's, like, really cool to me.
Event planning or something.
Yeah. Like, if we're talking about jobs, there are a lot of things I would do if legalities weren't a constraint. Time wasn't a constraint. If I had the click button, even better, from the movie with Adam Sandler.
Oh, my gosh.
Throwback.
Yep.
All right, another one here.
Okay.
What's the hardest thing about being a therapist?
I would say for me, the hardest thing, you know, outside of the general pieces, right? Insurance, all that stupid shit.
the buttering of insurance.
I would say the hardest part is truly knowing, is, like, truly in, like, that piece of, I can't actually make change happen. I actually have no control in those sessions because everything is based on what, like, my clients tell me and what they give me and what they decide to do outside of therapy. Like, I always tell my clients, I could have a book on how to live the most fulfilled, healthy, happy life. And I could have it written and I know it works and I know it's helpful and I could give it to you. But it is up to my client to read it, process it, implement it. And obviously barriers are there. We know that. But I actually have no control as a therapist. And I think that's probably one of the hardest parts of being a therapist is because I so badly want to help. And I want, my clients to feel better because, you know, I'm watching them struggling. But at the end of the day, I actually have no power in that.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the hardest part.
Because you can see the potential too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the, you know, the benefit of being that third party is seeing that potential. Like, mm-hmm. I can see the potential. I'm like, oh, I just know.
Yeah.
And not.
And I think of all the other factors, like, that are outside of our control too, yeah. that impact oh, yeah, the client. Absolutely. Like,
well, yeah.
That,
again.
I know, yeah. but it's just like, yeah, it's relatable.
That's the hardest part. Yeah.
Besides your training and skill set, what events or group of things have helped you improve your ability to help others? Why did you laugh?
Let's go. My mom! You know, I think, you know, my own journey through my own life has helped have a different sense of empathy and processing. You know, becoming a parent has mm-hmm. helped me, you know, relate to my parents differently. Having a child who is autistic helps me relate to other parents that are maybe clients who have children who are on the spectrum or neurodivergent. Being neurodivergent myself, that has really helped. And so outside of like, you know, trainings and things like that, like I think my own personal journey does help me mm-hmm. become those pieces because again, like I can just sit in a different seat.
Yeah, I love that. There's so many good questions. I'm like really struggling.
There really are.
Like, I'm really struggling right now because there's like a paragraph one that has like literally four questions that are so good, but I'm just
pick
gonna
pick two. One.
Yeah. Okay.
Number two.
And then I'll give you the rest. I'm just kidding. I'm joking. So how has your neurodivergence impacted your practice? And I'm assuming they mean as a therapist.
I would say, so the biggest piece was I realized how much I was masking mm-hmm. and really, really intently, like, needing to constantly be on as far as like paying attention, doing things like fidgeting to help me stay in that moment. I found that I was masking so much during the day that I was having, we talk about kids a lot, right? They mask all day. They come home and have a meltdown. I was doing that, but in an adult form.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, was coming home and I was irritable. And so like, I found like I was just masking so, so hard. And I would say that's the biggest way that that has impacted like my like working with clients because I so badly always wanted to be on. But I also found that like this interests me mm-hmm. with, for example, like ADHD, a lot of times when you have something that you're interested in, you hyper focus into it.
Yeah.
So because it is something that interests me, most days, like I was able to focus on that, unlike, you know, focusing folding my laundry because I have zero shits about my laundry. Like, I don't
we
like
know.
Small.
We all are very well aware. Yeah,
like your small talk about your dog. I don't like.
Yeah.
In the grocery store, I don't care. I'm not paying attention. Like, but like because I have such that focus on like, you know, trauma and really interested in those things, I find that that helps me pay attention more. Yeah. In that, but yeah, it was a lot of math. It was a lot of masking and like coping.
What do you want people to know about raising autistic kids?
That's a good one.
That really,
yeah.
really good.
I love my Oliver. Oh. I think that the biggest thing about raising autistic kids as a non-autistic individual, as a non-autistic parent, is remembering that you will never understand. Mm-hmm. And that you have to give that grace to your kids. So I do not understand what it's like to be autistic, but I have to understand that my son does. And while my son can't quite verbalize, you know, what his needs are and things like that, I need to pay attention even more. I need to pay attention to the things that light him up. Mm-hmm. And I need to pay attention to the things that I attempt to do with him. And watch when I'm seeing like that pushback and getting like you talk a lot about getting curious with that of is he pushing back because this is just difficult or mm-hmm. is he pushing back because this is uncomfortable? And I think that those are two very different things. So, you know, I think I talked about this before and I've said this in lives is like, I could take my circle child who is neurodivergent, autistic and try to stick him in a neurotypical square, right? Mm-hmm. I use the example of soccer. My kid is not a sports person. But I could, like 90% of other kids his age, stick him in soccer. Mm-hmm. that probably will not go well because it's not something that interests him. But instead, I pay attention to him. And I notice that my kid is hyperlexic and he loves letters and numbers and sounds. Mm-hmm. So what did I do? I put him in piano lessons. Mm-hmm. And he thrives in that. Every Thursday, he's like, are we going to piano with Miss Maya? Can we go to piano? Like, he has perfect pitch and he loves it because I'm paying attention to him versus trying to make him like every other kid.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that a lot of parents don't understand because we don't have those brains. And that's something that, you know, I probably am still messing up with him because I do not understand. Yeah. There are probably times that I'm still putting those neurotypical thoughts onto him.
Yeah.
But I always take a step back and I try to ask myself every major decision that I'm making for him when it's not around things like safety or things like that, why am I making this decision? Mm-hmm. Am I making it for the comfort of myself? Am I making it for the comfort of others? That's a big piece. I do not make decisions based on the comfort of others. I make it on the comfort of him. And that's the biggest thing. And you know, it's been a journey and I am a very different parent. We found out he had autism at like 22 months. I think he was almost two when we found out. And I'm a very different parent from there until now, because again, I listened to him. I wanted to listen to other autistic voices and what their experiences are because I want to do the best that I can for my kid. Mm-hmm. So.
So well said.
Awesome. I love him.
What did little KBI want to be when she grew up?
A teacher. And thank God I did not do that because I do not like kids.
After all that, what after a star that, transition.
I love my child. I do not listen
to your kids, you know, follow their unique needs.
I hate them. No, I don't like anybody else's kids. I did want to be a teacher. So in high, if you look at my kindergarten, like elementary, it was like, I want to be a teacher. I thought I was going to be a history teacher.
And do you like history?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do like history. I thought I was going to be a history teacher in the beginning of high school. Then I was like, I'm going to go in the Air Force. Thought I was going to do that. Realized I had to run in the military. That was not going to happen.
I do run now.
Because I have a choice in it. Back then, it was like, run the mile in high school. And I was like, oh, I can't. And then it was my senior year in high school when I took a psychology class. And that's when it all shifted.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. It was a wild ride. Could you imagine me being, like, a high school history teacher?
No.
Well, we also wouldn't know each other, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I think
you'd be, like, a teacher TikToker.
Yeah, maybe. She 100% would.
Yeah, maybe.
She'd be talking back to those kids. Yeah.
Do your fucking homework.
Yes. 100%. God. I can see it.
But also, I get it that you probably didn't sleep at night so you can take a nap in my class because that would be me.
Yeah.
I can see that too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. My ADHD is real bad today, guys, because I can't even pick any of these.
They're all so good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. If you feel comfortable sharing, how has the Lewiston shooting impacted your mental health? Do you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think I said this on one of our previous episodes that I do have the privilege that I lived a half hour away. Mm-hmm. I do not know anyone personally who was directly impacted by those shootings. I think my mental health, like it really, you know, was wonky those first couple of weeks where it was like, holy, this happened here because there's a thing about New England and there's a thing about Maine that you just don't get unless you live there. Mm-hmm. It is just a different lifestyle. And, it was hard. And again, I was privileged. I wasn't in a lockdown like some of the other towns. So I wasn't stuck in my house as well. So I did get to go out and get some of that energy out. I had therapy the day after, those type of things. I had a really great support system who got 2-minute voice memos of me ranting and raving. But I think it was just, for me, it was just another, like, why?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like, it sent me more into like that existential, like, why are we still doing this? why is this still happening? Mm-hmm. And obviously there were a lot of other, like, it was just like this whole thing of like, why? Mm-hmm. Why? So
it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
On a lighter note, what have your hobbies and interests been now and or throughout your life?
So right now it's TikTok. I would say, so I am a really crafty bitch. Mm-hmm. I am a do-it-yourself. Yeah. Like, I am crafty. Really so, like, are. I joke when I say, like, 80% of my wedding was do-it-yourself.
That doesn't surprise me.
No, I, like, you know, I have a Cricut. I can make homemade signs. I can make those wood signs. I'm going to make K10 a live, laugh, love one.
Target.
Bury me.
I know. I'm just going to grab the shovel. I can't imagine a worse thing for you. I cannot.
Live off like the brown
phone. Live off like toxic positivity.
You'd burn
what if I made you one? I'll put it in, it can go in your bathroom. Live, laugh, toast, bath.
It's not. There's no way that's going to make it. There's no way that can make it.
We're cutting that.
No, that can't make it.
Why not?
You know why.
I know. We should bleep it out and then just keep this part. And I'd be like, what did she say?
Oh my God.
Just came up. Yeah, I'm super crafty. Like, you know, I my son's Christmas preschool gifts, I got Dunkin' cups and I decorated them for gift cards. Like, I make signs. I do digital production. Like, I can make Christmas cards and things like that. What other hobbies do I have?
Taylor Swift.
Is Taylor Swift a hobby?
Stalking Taylor Swift.
That's the action of, okay.
What do I like? I like cooking.
You like getting Pearson tattooed.
I like cooking. I truly do like cooking. I do. One of the only things my mom ever gave me that was positive was a love for baking. I love baking.
You're a really good cook, though.
Yeah. I'm a pretty solid cook. I will give me that. But yeah, I don't, like, I'm not outdoorsy. Bugs. Like, I'm not, no.
Oxygen, for sure.
Greenery. Greenery. Iguanas.
Iguanas.
Yeah. Those old bastards. No, thanks.
Pretty large.
But yeah, no, I'm really crafty.
Yeah.
So.
I would like to note that she did not mention podcasting as an interest or hobby.
Not at all. She doesn't listen. She doesn't really care. She doesn't prepare. She's like...
She didn't introduce us.
She's like, I read the transcript.
I read the transcript, guys.
This is my show, but I'm not interested in it. It's not a hobby. It's not any of my favorite things.
No. None of you are my favorite people?
Never.
Please.
She's actually forced to sit here with us. Anyways, do you ever struggle with ADHD procrastination? And if so, what are your tips on pushing past it?
Every day of my damn life. To-do lists are my thing. I am the queen. I like gratification. So I will write a to-do list and I will write things down, like even eat.
I do
so
that. I can shower.
Check. I do a lot of like that blocking in my calendar. So if I know like I have paperwork, I put it in my calendar. That is a big piece. I am very much a procrastinator. But if it's something that has a high reward to me, I'm more inclined. I procrastinate the things that are very low reward. Very low.
Mm. Okay.
Progress notes.
Mm-hmm. First thing that came to mind.
Yeah, like Justin witnessed me, like, I was like, I got 3 days worth of progress notes to write. I definitely have to block stuff out. Even on the weekends, if I need to do things, I'll put it in my calendar to do. But also, I try to make things that are very low reward, try to make them higher reward. Mm. Whether it's like, when I do this, I get to treat myself to a treaty treat. Or I'll call a friend while I'm doing something or things like that. So I try to like pair it.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not going to like this one. But I'm going to ask you anyway. What part of yourself are you the most proud of?
Mm. Aww. I have an idea of what she's going to say.
Feelings. I am the most proud of the mother that I am.
I knew that was going to be your answer.
Coming, I mean, I had wonderful mother figures. I had a stepmother who was there for my entire life. But when you don't have that mother figure and you grow up knowing that the person who was supposed to love you and protect you with all of that did not do that, you question your worth and if you can do that. And for me, being able to see my son and know that he is getting something completely different because I chose to heal and I chose to do something differently for him because he is my world and my Saturn, that I did that for him. Mm-hmm. And that is probably the, and I did it for me. Like, I want to also say, like, I did that for me, but that he gets to reap all of those benefits and gets to wake up in the morning and not question if, you know, mommy loves me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is like probably the most proudest thing that I am of myself is like, again, like being able to, someone had, this is therapist stuff, but wrote in his little book, and he was like, here's to giving our children childhoods they don't have to recover from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that is what I'm most proud of. So
I love it.
Feelings.
And you should be proud of that.
You should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feelings.
I was like, would you like to name a feeling? No.
We have a feeling.
No.
We're
in a therapist's office right
just
now.
Like, yeah. Was it just you picking one right there?
Nothing. 0 out of 10.
This seems also related to your journey, though, in some ways, maybe more to ADHD, but does growing up as an undiagnosed neurodivergent girl cause trauma?
That's a good question.
Probably for some people. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if it caused trauma for me specifically. For me, it was just a lot of masking and pretending.
Yeah.
It's so funny, like, looking back, like, oh, it all makes sense now. But, like, for me, it was more, like, I was masking so much and pretending. And I was just exhausting. Like, for me, it was just exhausting. But I definitely think for some people, it can be traumatic, depending on your circumstances. But not, it wasn't. I don't think it was for me. And that could be because I'm comparing it to all the other traumas I experienced. But for me, it was like, I didn't really realize what I was doing, honestly, until I was in my late 20s, early 30s. I didn't realize, like, I just thought I was anal and type A and just was like a chatty Kathy and all of this. And I didn't realize like what I was doing until I had gotten older and was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oops.
Oops.
Well,
there
that's
we are.
A thing.
So I'm going to ask this one because I feel like you're going to have a, I don't know, interesting reaction based on me knowing you. Uh-huh. What is the make and model of your first car?
That is a security question. And you will not be given the answer to that when you try to steal my identity.
So you are using that as one.
No. Maybe on some website, probably. But that is my...
I never picked that one.
That's the hill I die on, is stop giving people so much personal information that they can hack your freaking bank account.
Oh my God.
Sorry, I had to.
I'm like, why are you posting your teens... first car. It's a security question, people.
Oh my God.
We don't need to know your grandmother's maiden name. Nobody can, like, keep it. Shut your face.
Words of wisdom.
And that's the one thing, like, you know, being on social media so much that I do.
Shut your face.
Is like how much information that we give people.
Yeah.
Like, we give so much. Even without intending, like, this is a hill I'll die on, guys.
I know, that's why
this is the hill. Like, there's a lot of hills. There are a lot of mountains.
I feel like every episode she's like, this is the hill I'm going to die on.
Someone has to have the list of so many hills.
But this is one of them. It's just like, pay attention to the information that you're putting out there, because it is like, it is,
it's out there.
It's out there.
Yeah.
Anybody can take it, and anybody can try to hack your bank account, hack into your email, like all of that. Like, so just keep some things to yourself.
All right. Why are you called KBI the real reason this time?
We want to know the real reason.
We want to know the real reason.
We wanted to know. Even though we still don't know. Like, we still, I'm kidding. Okay. We kind of know a little bit.
Okay. Well, you, then the story will sound familiar. So you guys know that I am from Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah. Okay. We're starting off with truth. Good.
I'm from Pennsylvania. I live about an hour and a half outside of Philly, and Philly has the Philadelphia Zoo, right? As a kid, we traveled there all the time into the teenage years, all of that. And so on one of our school trips, I can't believe I'm telling you this story. On one of our school trips,
you're so full of shit.
The gathering of yourself, I'm like,
just tell
don't,
okay,
don't tell the story that we can Google and find out.
Yeah, tell us about your school trip. Tell us about your school trip. We want to know.
What do you think? So on this school trip, we got to do this activity with the koala bears, right?
I know you're. I just, you know, when you just
continue the story.
This is what's really nice about being in person. So we had the koala bears, and we got to like play with them. Like, if you've ever like been around a koala bear, those things are fluffy shit. So got to play around with them, and then they did this like little thing where they brought them all out on stage, and they were like, oh, do you need a volunteer? Well, no, it was like a little show with the koala bears.
Okay.
You know, they bring out like the lizards, the
freaking Broadway show.
What's the other thing? The sloths.
The sloths.
Like koalas.
Yeah. Koalas. It's like tons of truck.
Why are lizards with koalas and sloths? I continue. Sorry.
Good. We're all listening.
So it's the koala show.
Yeah.
Continue.
And so they wanted a volunteer, so I raised my hand. And I got to like go up on stage with these koala bears and like the cage keepers. I don't know what they're called. And that's how I got my name. I was a koala bear instructor.
She's never going to tell you.
Koala bear instructor, guys.
That was very believable.
I just want to know what percentage of people out there believe that.
There's enough of them.
KBI.
I mean, it,
1%.
In her defense, it's better than kicking it back, which wasn't even in the right order.
Justin and I
are like,
KIB.
But that's the two Kristens were like,
But think about that for a second. And think about me.
Yes. Oh, it made perfect sense.
We were the first to point out that actually is not her nickname. It's KIB.
Yep. Oh my goodness. So yeah, that's how I got KBI.
I think we're almost down to our last question. We didn't ask. I don't even know if there's a short way to like answer, but like, why did you become a therapist? Why even be in the mental health field? Why are you doing this?
Yeah. So I became a therapist. So becoming a therapist, like outpatient provider, like mental health in that capacity, was by chance. Why I decided to pursue like psychology and kind of wanting to work with people in a way was in high school, I had a close friend die by suicide. Had no idea that they were struggling. Was actually pretty mean to them the day before. Mm-hmm. Still to this day, you know, can't apologize for that. And that really like deeply affected me because I was like, I just don't understand. I was like 16 at the time. Mm-hmm. I could not, like, my brain like could not understand why that would happen and how someone could feel so lonely in the world. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know more about that. I wanted to know more. I wanted to help so that nobody felt lonely. Mm-hmm. And you know, went to school for psychology, and then I graduated, and I was like, well, if I feel like I need to get my master's degree. Everybody in undergrad was like, if you're going for psychology, you have to get a master's degree. Like, you're not going to really do much with it. And I was like, cool.
Yeah.
So moved to Maine with my husband, got my master's in social work. And at the time, I thought I was going to work with either veterans or individuals who were victims of sexual violence. And thought that was going to happen. Graduated, took a job for 2 weeks, working with kids, and was like, nope.
bye.
Quit that job and went, at the time I was working on a crisis unit as like a per diem, and I was like, I need a job. So I took a job as an outpatient provider, clinician in a community mental health agency in rural Maine. And I said, I'm going to give myself 6 months. If I hate it in 6 months, I will still work, but I'll start looking for another job that, you know, is in this part of the field that I want to work in. By 6 months, I was like, this shit is my jam. I'm feeling as good as you are 6 months in the field for the first time. Feeling good. And I, you know, did that for, I did that solely for 4 years. I then got a promotion to be a supervisor, and I was a supervisor of clinicians and case managers for 3 years. And I still had my small caseload. And then, as we've talked about, I left that job back in May of 2023. And now I work as clinical support, not quite therapy. So it's not quite therapy, but it has therapy tones to it. I work as a clinical support for foster care parents.
That's great.
So yeah, to do that. So it's been, you know, a journey.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, thank you guys for joining to talk all about me. It's been really nice.
I feel like we're supposed to like do spirit fingers like over your head and just like fades.
This is like a whole other vibe, guys. I need more of this. I enjoy this. Not talking about me, but
this vibe.
It's like a whole vibe. It's okay. Like the spirit fingers were great.
In the famous blue room.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all good.
Well, if you want to send this to someone who might want to know more about me, please do. Thank you. And please remember to rate, give it a 5-star, you know. Subscribe, share, all of that, and we'll see you.
It's going to be real bad when you get like a 2-star.
I probably
do.
I know. Everyone's going to spite rate me one.
Yeah.
And we will see you next week in group therapy.
Bye.
Peace.
Oh God, it's more aggressive.
Christ. That-